Beware, spoilerphobes. You've stumbled upon a storm of spoilers. Welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I had a totem animal, a la the Black Panther, mine would be a mongoose, because it is a tiny rodent that fights snakes when it has to.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and if I were to pick a totem animal, a la the Black Panther, I would pick a dolphin, because you think they're cute. Except they're one giant muscle and they're always thinking. So watch out for the fearsome dolphin.
And I'm Neil Miller. And if I were to pick an animal as some sort of mystical companion that represents me in some way, I would be a gorilla. Because gorillas are great. They're big. They're strong. They relax a lot. They're very silently judgmental. It's...
Yeah, they're capable of learning American Sign Language.
It's my mystical animal.
They want that lemon drop drink, and then occasionally
you could
have them guard crystals when you mutant transform them into our Michael Crichton episode from a few weeks ago. You're listening to A Storm of Spoilers, a pop culture podcast. This week, we will be talking about the newest installment in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the first before everything clashes together in Avengers Infinity War, the last, not the first, that would be Iron Man from 2008. This is 2018's Black Panther. There's a lot to talk about. We're going to spend an episode doing it. But first, we have reviews read by our wonderful Joanna Robinson. Joanna, do we have any reviews this week?
Oh my gosh, we have a few. One very specific one that our listener requested to have read on this very particular podcast. This one comes from a listener named Sade, not the singer, but pronounced that way.
I don't know, maybe the singer.
Maybe the singer, our number one Storm of Spoilers fan, the singer Sade. Sade emailed this in, but is also putting it on iTunes under 5 stars, so it makes the rules. I have been thinking about writing a review, 5-star, of course, for a while, and then got this idea about submitting my review in time for the Black Panther episode so that before y'all start talking about Black Panther, the biggest black superhero movie ever released that also features slash showcases top-notch black talent during Black History Month, you can read a review from one of your black fans. Shout out to all my fellow black Storm of Spoilers listeners. This episode is about to be extra special for us. And then she threw up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 black power fists. And then she said, please reference my black power emojis. Now that I've said that for the culture, let me get to my actual review. I've been listening to this podcast since around season 4 of Game of Thrones, and it's been so amazing to watch y'all's evolution from being a preeminent Game of Thrones podcast to being an outstanding all-around pop culture podcast with the inclusion of the off-season tour. To potential listeners out there on this podcast, you'll hear 3 super informed, fair, intelligent, and humorous hosts who offer thoughtful opinions on topics at hand with such conviction that even when you don't agree, you can respect the argument. You'll be exposed to all sorts of pop culture properties in a way that's enjoyable, even if you're not initially familiar with them. Joanna, Dave, and Neil, I hold y'all's POVs in the highest regard and always look forward to hearing them every week. And I think I can speak for all your long-term listeners when I say, y'all are like friends in my head. Continue doing what y'all do, because y'all are super dope, both individually and as a team. See y'all at Con of Thrones Dallas. Much love, Sade. And Sade did ask me to read that in a Houston Action, which I did not do, because no amount of me listening to Beyonce could get me there. But thank you for that amazing review.
Oh, yeah, that's not the Houston accent.
Okay. She's from Houston, though, right?
Technically, yeah.
Okay, all right. Jeez. All right. Anyway, to piggyback off of what Sade says here, and I'm going rogue for a hot second to say that I'm so excited to talk about this movie. I'm so excited to talk about it with my two friends, but we are aware that we are like two white people and a brown person talking about a movie that means so much to the black community. We met a bunch of our like black listeners at the Con of Thrones last year. I'm so excited to like hear from you guys, and I'm glad that you guys like listening to us. But I do know that sometimes, like whenever I heard three dudes talking about Wonder Woman, you're like, this is not necessarily what the perspective I want. So I just want to say, in addition to us, if you want to go out and listen to some very smart black people talk about pop culture, I want to recommend two podcasts. Number one is Black Girl Nerds, which has a lot of Black Panther concept up on the Black Girl Nerds podcast feed, including a lot of like behind the scenes interviews and stuff like that. And then I don't know for a fact that they're talking about Black Panther, but I would be so surprised if they didn't. But Wesley Morris and Jenna Wortham have this great podcast still processing through New York Times. And I've certainly learned a lot listening to them talk about culture. I'd be so surprised if they didn't have a Black Panther episode. So I would tune in this week to those two podcasts and ours. Keep listening. We love all of our listeners. All right, that's it.
Yeah, we love our listeners from our lane to your lane every week in something new. Neil's section, it's called We Talked About This Already, where it covers some of those other topics I just obliquely referenced. Neil, what are we revisiting this week?
It's an exciting week. I don't have a whole lot of news. We'll keep it short, just like we did last week. Anyway. Con of Thrones, don't forget, there is a call for programming out there. You can suggest your own panels. I cannot wait to find out what your panels are. I cannot wait to show up at your panel. I cannot wait to ask a stupid question. So there's that. Also, it has been suggested, and I wanted to make sure that we talked about this on the podcast because I need firm public commitments. It's been suggested that we have at least a onesie day or some sort of onesie gathering at Con of Thrones. And I want to know if you guys are going to do this with me or if I'm going to be on my own here.
I like how Neil's taking up the mantle on this.
I'm not going to do this, but Dave, as an owner of many onesies, I don't think you should leave Neil hanging.
I mean, they are comfortable. And it is a con, so it's not like comfortable wear that's somewhat showy is out of place. So I would say there's a good chance that there'll at least be some onesie hanging time.
Nice.
I don't know if I could commit to like doing a panel in a onesie without it being officially endorsed, but if we want to like dance in some onesies and drink in some onesies and talk about pop culture in some onesies, my Dracula onesie is very formal looking, so we could do that basically anywhere.
I did find on the internet a place, oh, it's called Etsy, you guys know it,
what?
where someone is selling a set of Game of Thrones. You can get different houses Game of Thrones onesies.
So Game of Thronesies?
Game of Thronesies. Actually, this is what it should be. Someone, one of our intrepid listeners should submit an idea for a panel called Game of Thronesies. And it'll just be people talking about Game of Thrones in onesies. And I will be on your panel if it gets through. If they choose your panel, I will wear a Martell, House Martell onesie and drink wine.
You know, I like this idea. Not only, I mean, as people running, you know, your own programming, you'll have to come up with something to talk about for that period of time, but we could get like little house onesie stickers.
Oh my god, it like, could be all about the sleeping accommodations of Westeros.
Yeah, but someone who's a book reader has to do that though, because I have no idea how to judge from the television
series.
Deep
dive on the types of beds of Westeros. Like whose bed is most comfortable. Do they have
loungewear? It could also be about loungewear. Right. I'd be interested in
loungewear.
It seems like the Dornish would have great loungewear.
Hell yeah. Their normal armor is cool loungewear. So
yes, Neil's throwing the line out there for a onesie hang.
Right.
And we're going to
create a nerdy panel about sleeping in Westeros, and we'll all wear onesies.
I don't know why onesie panel sounds so much better than onesie
hang. Is it the hanging?
It's the hanging.
I would rather not do a onesie hang, but I could probably be convinced to do a onesie panel.
Nice.
A onesie panel sounds like supportive, and a onesie hang sounds like dangling's just happening everywhere.
Yeah, it's like it's too much dangling for strangers, you know?
All right. So I'm glad we got that out there. That's good. Moving on, next item of news. Peter Dinklage, in an interview this week, I shit you not, went out of his way to say that there are no Game of Thrones spoilers in that Doritos commercial from the Super Bowl. You'll recall this as the one where he lip syncs Busta Rhymes as he's walking down a corridor eating flaming hot Doritos, and at the end he breathes a little fire. Some people, probably too many people, instantly thought, oh my god, does that mean he's a Targaryen? Which, you know, lines up with some actual secret Targaryen theories that have been out there for around the years. But Peter Dinklage is not taking the bait on this one. He's saying that it's not a Game of Thrones spoiler, so I'm glad that's out there. There also are some other Game of Thrones, like actual spoilers, set stuff. We're going to save some of that for next week because we're going to do our fun theory emails. That'll be great.
But it's big, guys. It's big.
So next week we're doing a mailbag episode, which you can send us questions about whatever you want. But also we are going to do a Game of Thrones section at the end because, you know, it's good to just do a Game of Thrones section every once in a while.
Guys, they have a House Mormont onesies. So,
I'm telling you, this could be a thing. Should we host an official onesie party?
Why aren't we talking about Black Panther?
You are right that I would very likely not make it through said party without falling asleep. Okay, one more Game of Thrones thing. I've been seeing this float around. We're going to leave some links in the show notes. We could do that, right, Dave?
Yeah.
To concept art from two different artists. One is Kieran Belshaw, who has done Game of Thrones concept art for a long time, and the company Character, with K's instead of C-H's. And it's really brilliant. There's some really cool concept art, especially some of like the Dragonstone stuff. There's even some concept art that shows, that has like labels, like where they actually shot stuff, you know. So like if you're arriving at Dragonstone, they shot the beach in Spain, they shot the gates in Belfast, they shot the zigzag stairs in Spain, the interiors are probably in Belfast, and then the dragon landing areas in Northern Ireland. So just real fascinating stuff. So I would encourage you to check out. I'm a big concept art fan because sometimes it's way cooler than what you actually get in the show. Because stuff gets cut for budgetary reasons. Like there's one that Kieran Belshaw did of the Kingsmoot and what the Kingsmoot should have looked like. Instead, it just ended up being them standing on a rock. So Okay, that's it. That's all.
That sells that link. That's why I paused, as I was like, oh yeah, Kingsmoot art. Kingsmoot art is like the name of my coffee table
book.
Well,
yeah, and you know, in the book, it's very fascinating, the descriptions of like the sea bones and stuff. And so like the concept art's really, it got this really cool like backdrop. And then there's one that they put together that was like half of a ship sticking out of the ground. That was also very cool, but all of it got canceled for budgetary reasons because, I don't know, life isn't fair.
Yeah, it had it all go to that crappy last Pirates of the Caribbean movie. That's where all of cinema's sunken ships went. Oh, sorry, guys. I'm still bitter about stumbling across that movie on HBO and accidentally watching all of it. That's okay. That gives us a great segue to start talking about Black Panther. We are, as we do on Storm of Spoilers, as the title may indicate, be talking about the details of Black Panther in a section we're going to call The Storm. It's based on our Game of Thrones work. that is going to take place later in the episode. We'll give you warnings when we're about to talk about the ending, stuff past the middle, stuff you can't like pick up on the marketing. But the good thing about Black Panther is that this first section, which we're calling The Calm, spoiler free, includes a lot to talk about because this movie isn't just another MCU entry. It's been hyped to a cultural fever point, unlike something, say, Doctor Strange or Ant-Man. Nobody was hashtagging Ant-Man hype. We all had Edgar Wright questions. Black Panther, on the other hand, comes with its own hype before you even step in the theater, I feel like, regardless if you don't live in like the comic book community or on Twitter. I feel like somewhere culture is going to let you know that this weekend Black Panther is coming out. And it's really interesting to see how Ryan Coogler was able to make a Marvel movie that is something that I know I've been asking for ever since I knew that Marvel was going to start handing out different phase films and different heroes to different directors, which is let the director have a single vision and execute that vision. If it's a particular genre, let them fully execute that. If it's a particular type of world building or story they want to tell, let them execute that. Like I was saying before, with Ant-Man, Edgar Wright was brought on very early on in the process with an Ant-Man script that didn't really bring into account the fact that the Marvel Cinematic Universe existed. He got sort of uninterested in doing what they wanted from Ant-Man, which Peyton Reed stepped in and gave us the Paul Rudd movie that we all love, but unfortunately has to tie itself into S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter makes an appearance, and Michael Douglas is jealous of Tony Stark, and everything has to be sort of lumped into the universe, even for something like Doctor Strange, which might possibly be a prequel. It's unclear exactly where it takes place on the timeline, but if it's connected to Captain Marvel like we were thinking about when it came out, then it's definitely taking place earlier than we thought it was, and then the Winter Soldier Stephen Strange Easter egg maybe furthers that. But even that movie that seemingly has nothing to do with your Starks or your Shields had to kind of jam a time jam in there to sort of connect it to the greater Marvel Cinematic Universe. Black Panther is free of all that. Yes, the character was introduced in Civil War, and yes, Andy Serkis's character is back from his appearance in Avengers Age of Ultron, but I wouldn't say it's even necessary to have seen those movies to get what Black Panther's pulling off, because Ryan Coogler somehow managed to make a Marvel movie that feels like it's its own standalone superhero movie. And I think because of that, not only does the movie work very well right now as an entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and as a blockbuster film in this new era of releasing superhero movies that do really well in early in the year, but it's going to be something that we're going to be able to revisit and look upon favorably more than, say, your Iron Man 2s or your any of the Thors, probably, besides Ragnarok, where years from now, when Marvel phases aren't a thing, I think Black Panther, because it lives up to the cultural hype that surrounds it, is going to end up being maybe the most rewatchable Marvel movie. The Avengers is up there, but that still comes with a whole bunch of baggage and doesn't have as many, I think, successful story beats for me as Black Panther has. But that's my long-winded thoughts about not spoiling Black Panther, but my way of saying that I really like it because it's unique in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Let's go to Joanna, who's actually gotten to see it twice now, so probably has a lot of great, better thought-out things to say. Joanna?
I will say that I was really... We talked about this a couple weeks ago, I think, where we were like... Like a while enough ago that when we were like, we really want Black Panther to make all the money, it was before it was like tracking to make all the money. But it looks like it's going to make all the money this weekend. And that's amazing. And, because of that, because of the cultural significance around the film, I was super worried I wasn't going to like it, because there have been some of these films and comic book properties, like, even targeted at me, like, you know, your Wonder Woman's and your Jessica Jones, that I've been not as over the moon as some other people were. And so I was worried. It's a lonely feeling. And I was just worried that I wasn't going to love Black Panther as much as some people who saw it like the day before me at the premiere and were like, oh my God, best movie ever. But it's great. It's freaking great. It's a great movie. I have no reservations about it. I have like teeny tiny nits to pick, but they are truly tiny. I said, you know, when I came out of it the first time, I said it was too soon for me to decide whether or not it's the best Marvel movie ever. I have like, I don't know why I have such like a slow, or like a low inclination to name that. But, I was trying to compare it to my favorite, which is Winter Soldier. And I'm like, God, it's better than Winter Soldier, man. It is. So yeah, I guess I'm aboard the, it's the best Marvel movie ever train. There you go.
Ooh, decisive. Neil.
Yeah.
You're fresh off the Black Panther train. You're fresh off the Vibranium train.
Do we like you?
No, I'm good. I've been here this whole time.
What did you think about Black Panther?
It's really, really well made movie. Like Ryan Coogler as a filmmaker has, you know, and this is kind of what you talked about, Dave, is that you hope that they give a director sort of free rein to make the movie they want to make or operate in whatever genre they want to operate. And then you have to hope that the director that they pick is worthy of that. And it's really interesting to me, you know, Ryan Coogler, I don't think has made a bad film yet. But this is the movie you get when you build a blockbuster around characters instead of around action sequences.
Yes.
And I think that's an important thing to note, because walking away from this movie, I think the number one thing I thought was, man, Ryan Coogler cares very deeply about this world and about these characters, that he took a lot of time and he gives them a lot of room to be interesting and, you know, endear themselves to the audience, even essentially the villain of the film, who never really feels like the villain of the film, which is funny because it's probably a better villain than most Marvel movies. But I think that's really the thing. And I think one of the things that people will criticize, and one of the things that I found to be a little wonky, was it gets a little CGI soupy when there's fight scenes going on. And, you know, in the realm of Wakanda, in the country of Wakanda, there is technology that is foreign to our minds. So some of that looks a little interesting in motion. But beyond that, the movie really doesn't seem to care about getting all the action perfectly right and, you know, sort of meticulously executed like you would do in a movie where that's all you have. That's your only trick. So Black Panther has a bunch of other tricks, including making you care about its characters and teaching you, this, you know, ultimate mixtape of African culture, modern Black culture, and then complete fantasy, which is what a lot of the technology is in Wakanda. So it's a really fascinating, fun movie, and all the characters are awesome. So there's that.
Yeah.
Felt pretty good about it.
It is surprisingly character-based, and I think I haven't seen... Oh, I'm going to have to date myself to do this, but I'm sorry. That's the way Afrofuturism works. I haven't seen something this purely Afrofuturist since, I think, The Ear, the Eye, and the Arm. It was like a Newbery Award like nominee. It was a children's book in like the mid-90s that took place in like the 23rd century future Africa. No, I'm the only one. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Good to know. I'm sure there's some Scholastic Book Fair people that are yelling into the podcast right now. I hope you're there. But there's a whole idea of the genre of Afrofuturism, which I'm unfortunately not very well read in, which is why I had to date myself with a children's book. But the idea of extending Black people's existence into the future is something that white science fiction doesn't do, or at least hasn't done for the majority of the time the art form existed, starting, you know, probably with like Lovecraft being super racist. It's a great place to root all that. But now that, you know, that's the reason I think Black Panther has some things in it that feel groundbreaking just to see on film for the first time, because it's not an iteration of an idea that I've seen 1,000 times before. It's not a way to find another city that has to have a blue portal in the sky. It's the design of the city is much closer to something like Thor Ragnarok, which is trying to be completely foreign, but it's not. It's very Earth-based and recognizable, but projected into the future into a way that, like, the decoration of Shuri's lab feels both tribal and, like, graffiti, but then also formal because they found that Afrofuturist balance. And at least for me, it's very rare to see visuals of that. I'd only run across it, I think, in literature just because it's a difficult idea to get across to the mainstream, and I don't think I've ever seen it executed as well as this.
I was gonna say I don't know that I've ever seen an Afrofuturist film. I've read, you know, Basquiat and Octavia Butler and Who Fears Death. Like, I've read some really, really good Afrofuturistic novels, but I don't think I've ever seen film or TV, unless I'm forgetting something really obvious that I'll feel bad about. But yeah, visually, this world is just so stunning. And this comes from top down, right? So if Marvel decides that to make its Black Panther movie, it wants to hire Ryan Coogler, and then Ryan Coogler as director of the film, given as much, you know, support from the production side as possible, hires all these, like, Black artisans to work on the film. And that's just what makes it that's what gives it this feeling of, like, this isn't Disney trying, you know, it's not like it's a small world. You know what I mean? It's like, this is like authenticity from the roots up. And it's really just like, you can just feel the difference, and it's beautiful, beautiful film.
Yeah. It almost feels like there's a lot of, like, just like pent up creativity that comes, like, flowing out in this movie, where you really feel like, Ryan Coogler views this as a really great coming out party for a lot of these artists he's collaborating with. Like, I didn't expect them to mix in as much of the Kendrick Lamar album that they came out with in the movie. Like, I was like, oh, this is like a companion thing. But no, it's like, it's legit part of the rhythm of the film, which I thought was great. So there's it's celebratory. Like, it's hard. It's also hard to dislike because the story is really simple and the whole thing feels like a celebration of things that we have not previously gotten in our superhero movies.
I'm very excited that the score is going to be released this week, because that was another one of the things that really stood out to me, just because of how much it committed to being authentic. It was done by a white guy. His name's Ludwig Göransson, but he's got cred in the sense that he travels to learn about his compositions and then pop sensibility, because he helped mix Childish Gambino's Redbone and parts of that album. But the way that the score subverts, I guess the only fair way to say is that it subverts all other Marvel scores, because there's become a pattern about certain sound cues or bass drops or string trills being tied to certain moments. People, you know, leaping, hero shots, dramatic moments. Black Panther's score dedicates itself to different sort of Afrocentric sounds, but then also takes some moments to do some more string stuff that is reactive to the lines being said, which is much more detailed than Marvel scores usually get, because they sort of feel like they've been built from temp scores out. Whereas I feel like Black Panther, you know, when we're zooming into crazy parts of Wakanda that are super technologically advanced, we get trap drum drops. And then when we're doing, you know, the Dora Milaje fighting as with their traditional spear fighting, we get like war chants. We don't get these huge Captain America-esque soaring themes. I don't think there's a theme that I could really pull from Black Panther. But that being said, I love it for that. I love the score sort of dedicating to telling the story instead of you know, mixing in an Avengers theme or trying to play for a pastiche.
I think there's one, and I couldn't hum it for you right now, but the second time I saw it, like, it plays this important moment when T'Challa walks into the throne room, and, like, I knew how it was going to resolve, how the, like, chord was going to resolve in my head, and so I'm like, okay, this is obviously, like, a theme that I have put down in my head as the Black Panther theme, you know? So I think it's in there. But you're 1,000% right about everything else, and up to including, like, there isn't a theme that you walk into the theater humming, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad that we were past that part of superhero cinema. That's, like, a lot of what Black Panther does is it does a lot of things that other Marvel Cinematic Universe movies have either done or attempted to do, but they don't. Like, I went into Black Panther and my fears weren't so much that it wouldn't live up to the hype, but that it would live up to the hype and I would be unwilling to take it in a year that we're this close to Infinity War. Like, we're almost 20 goddamn movies into this thing. Like, how many times can I take a solo origin story about, like, a crazy MacGuffin object? It's amazing to me that it does certain things that are very superhero-y and certain things that are not superhero-y, and that all works. Like, I feel like this should have been a phase one movie. This encapsulates the tone of what the Marvel Cinematic Universe should be better than anything in phase one, better than any character does in the current timeline. Like, Tony Stark's too conflicted. Captain America isn't Captain America. Black Panther is, like, the hope and purity we want from this universe as we, like, go into its darkest hour. I'm really talking about it like it's my favorite Marvel movie, but I'm also not. I'm not where you are yet, Joanna.
Give it one more.
To piggyback off that, I think the only reason why is because Black Panther was a character that I did not have a comic book relationship with at all. So this movie was basically building from the ground up for me. I think it will be for a lot of people. But that doesn't change the thrill when you do grow up, you know, seeing the Hulk team up with Captain America, and then that happens in the first Avengers movie. So it's tough. Even though I think Black Panther functions better as a film, if we're talking favorites, it's going to be a toss-up, but it's a real toss-up between team-up movies that are huge and that are build-up of a whole bunch of movies, and Black Panther, which can stand on its own super strongly. So if it's a weighted score, Black Panther wins, I guess.
I wanted to give one more shout out to someone else behind the scene of this movie, and that's the producer, Nate Moore. I know at this point, having covered Marvel, not for very long, but you get to know the, like, various producers who crop up on every single movie, and Nate's not one of them. Nate's got producing credits on Winter Soldier, Civil War, and this one. And basically, Nate is, I mean, he's the only, I would say, non-white producer at Marvel. And he was in charge of, like, bringing Falcon to the screen and now Black Panther to the screen. It's sort of, like, been his role as stewarding in these more diverse characters. And I just think he's a fascinating person to keep an eyeball on. If you read, like, an interview from him around this movie, like, he says some really interesting things. So I just wanted to, like, put him on people's radar as like an example of Marvel really genuinely, I think, trying to do right by the character it's bringing to life from the top down.
So I have a question to round out this non-spoilery thing before we get into more of the nitty-gritty. But do we think releasing Black Panther now in February is a genius move, or one that was initially, when this movie started, a way to possibly cut it loose if it did bad and now has become a genius move because it ended up being a good movie?
Can it be both?
Yes, it could definitely be both. I think if it's both, then I would side on the, you know, good intentions but institutional racism. I'm just wondering if at some point, like, is 2 years of having like February, March superhero movies that do well and have legs enough evidence that somebody was super smart to be like, there's nothing between this release date and Wrinkle in Time, let's drop Black Panther here? Or is this still Marvel had a plan a long way out they let Black Panther not have an Infinity Gem in it or not have Captain America in it in case they had to cut ties with it.
Spoiler.
And I guess. I mean, I can only say it doesn't have any connections to the MCU, you know, so many times before I could just have to say that it's the gem thing. But the point being is, like, this movie falls right in between we could let it go if it becomes a liability, or Marvel being super reactionary and prescient in how the superhero market's working. And I'm wondering, especially Joanna, since you've been covering them and as they've been making this move out of the Ike Perlmutter era of sort of being really slow to change, is Black Panther really, did we break through the barrier? Is Marvel being responsive? Is Marvel Studios being responsive? Or did they just accidentally fall into a genius movie?
Well, it's so funny, because then it would be like responsive to what? I mean, I think Marvel, I want to take them at their word when they say, we were already responding to this by the time you're like giving us credit for responding to this. So like thinking about when they announced Black Panther and Captain Marvel, that was a while ago. And it's just that Marvel likes to move slowly to make sure it gives everything the strongest launch it can. I really do think that's true. And so I think that while it's frustrating for any audience, and specifically Black audiences, to have to wait this long for T'Challa to have his own film, the way they threaded him in through Civil War and building it all up, you know, I was rewatching Ultron, so building, like, watching all the stuff in Ultron that helps build the way for Black Panther, like, that's a long con. So I wouldn't call it reactionary at all, but I would call it a reaction to something they saw in the water years ago that they should have seen in the water many years before that. So that's what I would say about that. You're saying the two successful comic book films, you're talking about Deadpool and then Logan, both doing well in this slot. Yeah, and that is interesting.
Well, and then isn't that the Lego movie spot the year before? There's a profitable blockbuster spot in the early months now.
It goes all the way back to like 2009. It was the 300 spot.
So there's
another thing.
It's a new spot. Yeah. It's a new spot. But like back in my day when I was in film school, this was still dumping ground. We were all still talking about Oscar movies, period. It was not here comes blockbuster movie, period.
I mean, I think it's secret. Well, not so secretly brilliant of them to put it where there's nothing else going on. Especially,
I mean,
like movie wise, there's nothing else going on. Because that's I don't know. It's weird to say, but Black Panther still is sort of a niche film, except that it's going to make all the money. So this is where you put those kind of what feel like genre films or niche films. Like even the Fast and the Furious franchise for a bunch of years was, you know, going in like April or March. So, It feels natural. It feels brilliant because there's nothing stopping it from making tons of money. I will say this, though. The one thought that I keep having as we have this discussion is that Marvel's confidence in Black Panther is on screen. Like, you can tell that they didn't... It's not a cheap movie. They didn't get, you know, second-tier actors. They got, like, legit people working on this movie. So I feel like that is more of an explanation of their confidence than when they put it out, because I think at this point Marvel could probably put a movie out anywhere they want in the year and it'll make a lot of money.
Well, they know that now, but like so I was looking up when they announced this date. It was 2015, so before Deadpool, before Logan, they settled on this date for Black Panther, and it was right around the same time that they announced that they had hired Ryan Coogler to direct. So I'm gonna see it as a Black History Month thing and a really smart thing to do.
I mean, it does,
for Black History Month, you know, so.
In hindsight, it seems like an obvious thing where it's like, oh yeah, release during Black History Month. That's like perfect.
And I don't know that I agree with you, Dave, that they, I mean, I guess the film itself could be excised from the whole, but they've at least been confident in Black Panther for a while because Wakanda is so central to Infinity War. Do you know? So, like, it's not just sealed, hermetically sealed off into this film. We know that from the trailers that Wakanda has a huge role to play in the first Infinity War film. So that's them already, you know, blending one film into the next, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yes, but we still, until we see Infinity War, no, we're going to save to talk about this and we can talk about the plot. Interesting thoughts from everybody. I've just been super interested in the game theory around Black Panther because I kind of feel like, having now seen the movie, if everybody had seen this movie at some time when they could still move it, I think they are leaving money on the table for not having this in the middle of superhero summer season. But we'll see. You know, who knows? We'll definitely see if it takes all the money.
From a movie standpoint, just like as a movie, it feels rewatchable. It doesn't feel like one of those movies. It feels like a movie that I have tickets to go this weekend. I can't wait to see it again. I feel like people are going to go want to see it a couple times. So I feel like that's where it could turn out to be a really genius move to put it out, you know, a month before any other reasonably big movie.
Yeah, and they don't have anything until Wrinkle in Time, and that's also Disney in March, so it's shared market, and I don't even know if it's a shared market. Yeah, and it's working out well. Let's hope Wrinkle in Time could live up to Black Panther, because Black Panther's good is the moral of this first segment. Let's move on and talk a little bit about the plot of this movie. This is the first movie, superhero movie that started in 1992 Oakland that didn't make me hate the fact that it started in 1992 Oakland. I don't think there's another one, but
There are some
90s movies about black superheroes that are about how funny it would be if a black person was a superhero, like your Meteor Man, your black people's superhero
Blank
comedy
Man.
Action things. Well, Blank Man.
Let me just say that that scene in the Oakland high rise could have been shot like a block from my house. Like, that's exactly where I live. It is still like that in many ways. And I was cringing at first at the like Sterling K. Brown and young Forest Whitaker, who's actually Forest Whitaker's son, I believe, that actor.
Does he have that eye with
the eye thing?
I think it's for. I think he's at least related to Forest Whitaker. Anyway.
Oh man.
Let's see. Ocean Whitaker? No. Okay. Never mind. Let's just move on with our lives.
That's fair.
But yeah. So I was like cringy a little, and then like they're both secret Wakandans, and I was like, oh okay, this is not. Oh, this is not that. This is something else. That's great. This is all great. I'm so happy to be here. So, yeah, I don't know if that was coherent, but I was happy to see my hometown, my current hometown represented on screen. It's in a bunch of, Oakland's in a bunch of movies this year. So look out.
Yeah.
You sound so proud. Proud for Oakland.
I am proud for Oakland. I love Oakland.
It's in that battle rap movie.
Okay.
I don't remember the name of it. Joseph Kahn, direct. It doesn't matter. It's not related to Black Panther, other than it has Oakland in it. Let's move on. Let's move back to talking about Black Panther, because it's.
We see a scene there that we sort of see half of, because we realize later on in the movie we're going to flash back, as what we were actually seeing was T'Challa's father.
T'Chaka.
Killing
T'Chaka.
T'Chaka. Thank you. T'Challa's brother. This is going to be. The plot summary thing is going to be fun. Dave trying to remember how things were pronounced while looking at how he wrote them down. We figure out that he killed his brother, who was trying to allow vibranium technology to get out so disenfranchised peoples could overthrow their oppressors. This ends up being a motive he passes down to Eric Killmonger, his son, who is played by Michael B. Jordan, who shows up right after T'Challa has taken his trials and takes over for his dead father who was blown up in civil war. The nation of Wakanda is sort of torn about whether or not they should still say isolationists and continue to pretend they're poor farmers, which is sort of the push and pull is shown through the old fashioned council and the Lupita Nyong'o's Nakia, who used to be all in Wakanda, but now she goes out and does her spy things and helps humanitarian aid without letting people know that Wakanda is a living country. This all comes to a head because Claw Andy Serkis is back trying to get his hands on more vibranium, teams up with Killmonger, who wants to, I guess, fulfill his birthright and unseat T'Challa as king and distribute vibranium, like his father said, to oppressed peoples to overthrow their oppressors. And that is the plot of the film. I guess the way...
Neil, this is what Thought Bubble episodes are like.
I'm trying to not leave out important things, but also...
The way you describe the plot.
Yeah.
Because my takeaway from the plot is that it's actually less about the sort of Killmonger. Although I guess, you know, there's plenty of like action and stuff that is part of Killmonger's story. But it's more about this sort of idea of isolationism and tribalism and whether or not... So what I found really fascinating is that the movie takes on its shoulders this idea that Wakanda has been sitting by for thousands of years while the rest of the world has enslaved and killed and done horrible things to the people who came from Africa. So the fact that the film that weighs directly on the film and the film chooses to sort of deal with that, I thought was really interesting and really sort of just, you know, really bold choice to go there. But also that's, I think, what makes it feel so grounded and so real is because it's allowing this country that exists in a fantasy world to deal with what would happen to it if it existed in our real world. So I thought that was really interesting.
It's also a good storytelling way. Here's what I imagine. Since Ryan Coogler is so smart and since he has already so successfully come into an established franchise, like the Rocky franchise and like done his own installment of it, I imagine Ryan Coogler comes to this film in the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe and is like, I've got a few questions to answer. Like, where was Wakanda?
During slavery.
not just during slavery, but like during the Battle of New York, like during these things that we've seen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, why wasn't Wakanda involved? And
that makes sense too.
Answers it just in the best way, which is like, this is, we don't get involved. We stay hidden and that's what we do. And I think that's, you know, there's a few other things that I feel like Ryan Coogler set himself a question and came up with an answer. And that I think works really well in the whole thing. There are ways in which I almost did a joking introduction for this, though, where I was like, this is about Michael B. Jordan, who loses his dad at a really young age. And he grows up and he keeps training and training. He's got to fight those inner demons and the outer demons. And he has this big fight and he wins. And it's called Creed. But actually it's his storyline in Black Panther. There's one point when the fight between, Eric Killmonger, the trial fight between Killmonger and T'Challa becomes like a boxing match, and I was like, oh, I don't mind that I'm watching Creed again. I'm really fine with it. He's just, and that's another question that Ryan Coogler has to answer is like, how can I make the most compelling villain? And it's like, make him the hero of any other story. You know, like that's kind of who Michael B. Jordan is he's the hero. He's on his own hero's journey. He just happens to like be slightly off the moral compass in doing so.
Yeah, and if you're like anti-royal families, or like, you know, that whole, what do they call that?
Monarchy?
Monarchy, yes. If you're anti-monarchy, then you may actually root for the villain in this movie. Because he makes a pretty...
You selected regicide.
He makes his own fairly compelling case. And I think that's also part of the brilliance of the push-pull between the hero and the villain of this movie is that they both kind of have a point. Like, nobody's perfect. Like, neither side is perfect, you know, because T'Challa is reckoning with, you know, all the things that his father did to keep Wakanda secret, and Eric Killmonger is reckoning with the fact that he was left outside in the world with no help from the very powerful nation of Wakanda that could solve many different crises in the world with their technology, but choose not to because they, you know, they don't want to get involved.
And so T'Challa keeps calling him a monster of our own making. Like, this is the monster we made. And then you can extrapolate that to be the larger problem of all the young black men who have been left behind and ignored. And, like, that's... There's this great line in the dream sequence where Eric goes to visit Sterling K. Brown in the afterlife, but also in Oakland. And the kid version of him goes, like, you know, he's like, the dad says, no tears for me. And the kid goes, everyone dies around here. And, I, you know, there's just so much Ryan Coogler saying about the systematic, like, neglect of a community by its own community that I just find so amazing in a Marvel movie. And
right, it's way smarter all of than all well, your other Marvel movies. Like, well, I was like, oh my god, that's that, a super smart movie.
Does all of that, and it's just really entertaining. There's just like a nice light humor throughout, provided by Danai Gurira, provided by Letitia Wright, provided by Chadwick Boseman at times. The action, I think, is really good. I was really dreading the Panther and Panther fight on the monorail. And I thought the whole concept of the lights sort of...
It's a magnetic
burning.
Lift train. Yeah. Monorail would imply a rail.
For the record, Denzel Whitaker is not Forrest Whitaker's son, but his name is Whitaker. And he was named for Denzel Washington, but he is the son of neither Denzel Washington nor Forrest Whitaker. Even though he's played Forrest Whitaker's son now and then also a younger version of Forrest Whitaker. Anyway, so on the magnetic lift train fight, is that what it's called, Dave?
It works. That's good. That's just, you know, monorail rail. There's a rail and it's not a rail.
There was a...
It's part of the plot, but there's not a rail.
It looks like there's a rail.
Thank you. I think there's a rail.
No. Martin Freeman talks about it being a magnetic lift train, and he's never seen them on that scale. They talk about it.
Like a light underneath it, but it kind of looked like a rail.
Okay, but it can't be. It's very important that we get this distinction right.
It's
in a world where the previous White House spent so much money on us trying to understand what high speed rail was, the difference is important. Continue, Joanna.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, sorry. I'm Googling monorail Wakanda.
Go. Is someone going to call it a monorail? Ryan Coogler says rails are in the eyes of the beholder.
Yeah, rails are in the eyes of the beholder. Anyway, what a great movie it was. And I want to say one last thing, which is two last things. All the women, fucking, come on.
Killed
this
it.
This movie. I was watching Ultron yesterday. Movie is even worse than I remembered it. And like, you know, Scarlet Witch is there, but like, you know, she's in the villain role. So it's really just Black Widow, like hanging with the dudes. And it's just very much like only one. And it's, to see this movie and to see Danai Gurira, Letitia Wright, Lupita Nyong'o, Angela Bassett, Florence Kasumba, like all these women doing all these different great things in this movie. It just made me really happy. And then shout out to Andy Serkis and Martin Freeman as the token white dudes. I thought they were great in their roles.
Tolkien white dudes.
What?
Oh, I get that one. Everybody was fun in this movie. That's the point. Andy Serkis he just dials it up to like 13 in the crazy scale.
I think this is best live action performance. And And it's impossible to grade it against a motion capture performance, but like, this is maybe the most I've ever enjoyed Andy Serkis, and I always enjoy Andy Serkis. So yeah,
that's fair.
This is the most it looks like Andy Serkis is enjoying himself. Like, I don't know how, like you're saying, I don't know how to compare it to like Caesar or whatnot, but I do know how to compare watching Caesar and watching Claw and being like, that one looks like it'd be fun to do. That one looks like it's a job to do.
But he's still kind of as Claw, you know, comparing, having just watched Ultron, comparing his Ultron Claw to this Claw, like this Claw is so much more Caesar. He's still walking kind of like an ape in this movie, but it like really, really fits the role. So good.
Yeah. And I love Michael B. Jordan as the bad guy. I mean, he's not really even bad, but as the antagonist of the film.
Has the Black Panther that kills people.
Basically. Also, there's this whole like Bonnie and Clyde thing, and then he just shoots her. Like, man, that's rough.
That's one of the weird times that like being somebody that covers movies like clashed with the movie happening, because when in those early scenes I'm like, man, the marketing's done a really good job. I did not know he had henchmen. And then poof, nope, shot her in the head.
Right. He does. And
I was like, oh, henchmen. Doesn't have henchmen. Good to know.
I did want to mention this one sort of mini controversy, perhaps, that sprung up. When I went to the Marvel offices last year, along with a bunch of other journalists, they showed us a lot of footage and from upcoming projects. And one of the scenes they showed us is, like, if you've seen the movie by now, and hopefully you have if you're listening to the Storm section, there's a scene where everyone's on boats going to the coronation ceremony, or the, you know, the trial. And, you know, you see Letitia Wright and Angela Bassett as, you know, the queen and the princess dancing. You see Lupita Nyong'o with her, like, I think she's the River Tribe or whatever. You see them dancing. And then you see the Dora Milaje, which is Danai Gurira, Florence Kasumba, and a bunch of other actresses, on a boat, also sort of like with their spears. And I saw a scene where those two women, Florence Kasumba and played by Florence Kasumba and Danai Gurira, were flirting with each other, talking about how good they looked. It was super gay. And we should mention, and then in the comic books, both the Black Panther main storyline and then the World of Wakanda spinoff that Roxane Gay contributed to, there was a gay relationship between two of the Dora Milaje warrior women. And so I really do think, you know, and when I wrote this article about the footage that I saw, and Disney got upset and like actually called me. I like pulled over on the 5 to take this phone call from Disney. They're mad about me writing it. Or more to the point, they were concerned that it would set false expectations. And so they asked me to add comment to it, which I did. And if you go and look, their comment is there. We didn't change the article, but we added their comment. That footage didn't make it into the film. And so, you know, kudos to Black Panther for the many, 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 many ways in which it represents Black people and women in such a great and groundbreaking way. Bummer that Disney is still too chicken shit about this particular thing.
Yeah, bummer.
So I mean,
there's a movie to do it. Why not do it in Black Panther?
Well,
I don't know. Is there a reason why not?
There might be some cultural reasons, but like I believe then that some of the stuff with Danai Gurira's character having a relationship with Daniel Kaluuya's character might have been added after the fact to really like strip the gay away. And that's,
if that happens, then there's also the oh man, isn't the white patriarchy endemic in all the best intentions, where they probably added more Daniel Kaluuya after they realized Get Out was going to be a thing.
Oh, they definitely did that. Because I was told, I was told he had a teeny tiny part, and now it's like actually kind of significant. So,
do you guys also find yourself, whenever he's on screen anywhere, yelling at the screen, don't trust anyone. Don't trust anyone. I fear for him.
Well, especially because he gets suckered in so easily by Killmonger in this movie, which I understand why it has to happen, because we're on a Shakespearean level story about generations and kings. We don't have to like wait and talk about every general's reason for betraying things. Like, that's just a part that needs to happen. But that being said, You know what? Maybe if they committed to it more, the whole like rhino lick leading to the submission thing would have played lame. But I mean, either way, they did a really good job inserting more of a character who seemingly never had to be on a real set for the entirety of that shoot.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I mean, I think every single Marvel movie gets Frankenstein together in some way or another. And this one does some of the best work in hiding those seams. But I think like some stuff like Daniel Kaluuya's turn in the film, I think that would, like I mentioned, teeny tiny nits to pick. That would be one I would pick because I don't think it makes entire sense how quickly.
Yeah, they're like best friends at the beginning, and then all of a sudden he's like, well, yeah, now I'm with this guy.
I mean, I get the like the whole line about like, you know, your father did nothing and I thought you were different, but you're just the same. Like, that's a good line. That's a good motivation. I just, the way it all sort of unfolds feels like really, really fast. But yeah, so does this mean watching this on the heels of Thor Ragnarok, which just did so feel like a Taika movie, does Marvel officially get to kick off the reputation of being creatively stifling of its filmmakers?
Nope, because we still have an Infinity War.
Yeah, but that's different because I don't think they're stifling the
too
Russos.
Too much milk in your coffee, Russo brothers.
I don't think they're stifling the Russos. I think the Russos, that's just who the Russos are. They're workmen directors.
Yeah, they're kind of down.
They need a basis. We have different opinions on Captain America Winter Soldier.
Sure.
They need a basis from which to riff off of, and big crossover movie with 63 main characters is not a basis. That's a menu. So I don't have high hopes for Infinity War. I think a lot of the thrills,
the question was, is every movie from now on out going to be some genius gem a la Ragnarok and Black Panther? The question was, does Marvel get more credit than it has in other movies for allowing its filmmakers creative license within the structure, the established structure of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
I don't know. It's so hard to judge. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, no, I think what we should give Marvel credit for is at the 20 movie mark, they've sort of figured it out, and I guess that means that they figured it out at like the 12 or 13 movie mark, that they, that certain properties are better turned over entirely, and certain properties that sort of have to be down the middle. You know, I mean, basically, in my mind, I think Marvel's figured out that there are Russo Brothers movies, and then there's all these other stories that all these other interesting people want to tell for them. And well, they're okay with both now, which is good.
Well, and especially since the Russos are leaving after the second Infinity War film, the Russos are leaving. They're not doing that anymore. They're not doing what they've done anymore after they do Infinity War.
So maybe they have figured something out. I think that we should give them credit for recognizing what's working. You know, what's in the last six or seven movies has worked really well. And I think
I don't think they don't know what's working. I just think that they're willing to stick with something that they know works. Like, I don't like it to answer Joanna's question with a question, what does a Peyton Reed movie look like? Did we not get to a pure Peyton Reed movie with Ant-Man? Does it take Ant-Man and the Wasp to get there? Otherwise, why are we doing that? Like,
well,
I don't.
But Peyton Reed was hired for a different purpose. Peyton Reed was like and I say this with love, I like Peyton Reed as a human, and I think he did a great job with Ant-Man, but I think they went with they didn't go with a very, very creative filmmaker to sort of help patch together what was left of the Edgar Wright concept. That needed to be just something that was smooth and workman. And yeah, you keep Peyton Reed because he did a good job with Ant-Man, so you keep him. But like, I don't think that's the same hire as a Ryan Coogler hire. And I think, you know, them hiring, God, I always get their names wrong. It's Anna Fleck and Ryan Bowden, and Bowden and Ryan Fleck. Those two, to direct Captain Marvel. Like, I know what their movies look like. And so...
And, I mean, John Watts' Spider-Man Homecoming did really good, too. So I'm not saying you're completely wrong. I'm just not sure if we've passed that hiring Rubicon yet. I think Ryan Coogler is still the exception to the rule, who maybe because everybody was scared to screw it up for him, got to, you know, squeeze as much of this thing without any of it slipping through his fingers. And so the only thing that we could, like, really nitpick is that cut out a relationship to put in more of an Oscar name, a nominated actor, which is bad, but it's a sin. fair enough. But I don't know. I'm interested to see what Ant-Man and the Wasp is, and I'm interested to see what Infinity War is, because I'm interested to see at the end of this phase three wrap up, how much this year of 2018 actually ends up being what they thought it was going to be when they kicked it off. I think because there are so many movies in Phase 3 and because Phase 3 went into so many different directions, if they can stick the landing, it's going to be something we get to debate from like a game theory superhero movie fan perspective for a while. But like, yeah, it's really hard to call. It's harder to call than it was when like we were talking about whitewashing or Doctor Strange or Guardians of the Galaxy 2. You know, sort of allowed to be a little bit more weird. I don't know if we're at full director trust yet, but we're definitely closer than we've ever been. So I'm going to put, I'm going to rate Joanna at 80% right.
That's higher than I usually get, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's too early to tell. If these are the outliers, you know, because really what you'd be looking at is like Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther both being sort of pieces of their director. We won't know for a couple of years whether that's the new Marvel or whether that was they just got lucky twice in a row.
Go ahead.
Please finish this up. I have another thought, though, that I want to explore.
Okay. I'm very happy with how Marvel's managed to take characters that I loved, that I would have been able to tell you what the top comic book storylines are, and have managed to sidestep what DC did, which was try to cobble all the best, quote unquote, best storylines together to like make something. The fact that I'm interested in T'Challa and the fact that I'm interested to see what they do with Captain Marvel, even though I haven't been a big reader of Captain Marvel comics ever, I think that all of that is more exciting potentially than how excited I was when I was like, oh man, Captain America and Hulk and Iron Man are all going to meet up. Like, that's wish fulfillment to a certain period of time. What I'm hoping is that post phase three movies are actually like fun to be individual pieces again, which I think Black Panther is a step in that direction. And if I were to guess how to prescribe to do that, I would say let directors have more control. But the reality is I don't know, because I got basically 20 movies that I was okay with. I'm not criticizing somebody who's less intelligent than me. I'm groping in the dark and touching part of an elephant I don't understand. Sorry. Go ahead, Joanna.
Well, I wanted to talk about this pre-backlash before hopefully it gets too loud. Or I'm hoping this is just like, we can just address it here and then we don't have to talk about it again. Hopefully it doesn't become as much of a story as it did with The Last Jedi. But IMDb already has like many, many, many reviews in, which is kind of crazy because the film is not open here in the US yet, though it did open in the UK today, I believe. And a lot of negative reviews. And then there's a friend of a show who works for Rotten Tomatoes who told me that they've also gotten just like an unbelievable, unreasonable number of negative reviews from users pouring in before the movie has even hit the theaters. So there is a targeted campaign by, I mean, what else to call them but racists, trying to tank the ratings on this movie. I've already railed against aggregate film review ratings before. I think they're do more harm than good. I think you should just ignore whatever percentage is up on Rotten Tomatoes and whatever percentage is up on IMDb and just go see this movie because it's great. Hopefully you've already seen it if you're listening to this. But honestly, like the more we talk about this, these troll attacks, the more air they get, the more importance they have when really like it means nothing. An audience score on Rotten Tomatoes means nothing. Neither does the one on IMDb because studios aren't even can't even like take it as serious data because it's so easily corrupted, you know? So
yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like you shouldn't care because if you go see the movie and you like it, that score doesn't change what you thought. And studios really don't care. They just care how much the movie makes. So I think, you know, the way I think of it is it goes to me even beyond, I mean, with Black Panther, there's a racial component to it, which is gross. But I just think that there are a lot of people, there's a small group of people who've found ways to be louder on the internet than they would be in a crowd. And I think that they're no different than the kid who, you know, walked up to you in the lunchroom in middle school and stole something off your plate just to be a dick about it. Maybe a little too personal of a story.
Yeah, no, it's like not liking what your neighbor is watching on TV, so you light your lawn on fire.
Right.
That's basically what's happening. It's
just they go away if you ignore them. And so I think we do our best to ignore them and continue having conversations with people who actually want to engage with the art
and
or
the craft. If you are a person of color and you are or not, and like you are offended by this and angry about it, I'm not saying that like.
Oh no, you have every right to be angry.
Don't get mad about racists being terrible on the internet. And like if it's something that you want to talk about more, like I want to listen to your thoughts and feelings on that. It just bums me out that in calling these people out, which we should by all means do, we're also giving them the attention that they want. And so it feels like a lose-lose. They win no matter what, and they're the worst. And so that's terrible.
Yeah. I feel like ultimately the people who go see this movie will be the winners. So.
Yes, because it's so fun. I'm seeing it again. So I saw it for the second time today, and I'm seeing it again on Saturday, and I'm really excited.
I'm seeing it on Saturday as well.
Oh, I'm seeing it on Thursday.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, because my screening was in 3D, and not only that, the first 10 minutes were in out-of-focus 3D. Mm. So I'm super looking forward to actually seeing the beginning of this movie. And then also at the end, I think there's some ghosting on the texture mapping on the Black Panther suit. Nobody will ever notice that except for me. I wrote down about when it happens, though, so I'm going to check that for my personal polygon feelings, because I think for certain parts of this, definitely for certain parts of this, they did what they did for Civil War, which is a guy's wearing a black cat suit, but all your vibranium textures and your lights and everything, that's all added in post. So I think when Neil was talking about sometimes it becomes CGI soup, I think a lot of that is because they're doing suit replacement. Like, it's not that they aren't in skin tight suits because these guys are buff and can do that and look like that, but the texture of the mesh, I think, sometimes floats. But, you know, I can't tell for sure because I saw a bad 3D projection. Maybe don't do press screenings in 3D anymore. If anybody who's listening to this has the power to do that decision, maybe.
I agree. I
also think it wasn't bright enough at the beginning, and that's really bad for a movie that starts at night and is called Black Panther.
Dave, do you want to put your speculation hat on and talk about like what you feel like this movie lays track for in the coming franchise or the next films or anything like that?
Sure. I feel like we could be really brief about it. So what this movie does is it opens up Wakanda to the rest of the world. What Nate Moore had said previously is that Shuri is actually the smartest person
in the world.
She's also quite funny. Which I think guess you would be if you were very smart.
And gets like all the best lines. It's almost like they like let the actress write her own lines.
That's the only line. That's really the only piece that connects to the rest of anything that's happened in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, except for obviously Ulysses Klaue in the vibranium, is when she's like, oh, another broken white boy.
And, yeah, and it's just dropped there. And...
Yeah.
Wait, there's a post-credits?
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
Oh, there's two post-credits. There's a mid-credits and a post-credits. Oh, well, that's okay. I'll talk about it here. Okay. So the first mid-credits scene is basically an echo of the 2008 Iron Man scene, but the black version at the UN, which basically just means that now the technology of Wakanda is opened up to the Earth, which is a great time because there's no really active shield and Thanos is coming. That means that Wakanda is now also the safest place on Earth, and that since they're not keeping themselves secret, they'll be able to house the people who are in the most danger. Say if you have an Infinity Stone embedded in your head, or if you are some sort of Hulk person that maybe can't Hulk out all the time and needs some sort of mechanical assistance to bust your Hulk. Too far, Dave. Anyway, I think we're going to see a lot more Shuri. We're going to see definitely a lot more Wakanda. We're used to the technology of their various armies, which they're going to put up against the Army of the Black Order, which has many arms. And what was the thing I was going to answer? Oh, yeah, the post-credits scene. So after everything's done, we see Bucky, one-armed Bucky, in red and blue robes come out of a tent. And Shuri says he still has much to learn, but he's looking good. Which is, of course, a reference to Marvel's Infinity War prequel number one of two Marvel tie-in comics where they talk about what the Avengers have been doing leading up to Infinity War. And we see that Shuri has used the Ultron technology, or the Jarvis technology, but the technology from Age of Ultron to make a digital map of Bucky's brain. She basically made a Jarvis, but it was Bucky. And then ran algorithms on that until she was sure she could safely delete all the Winter Soldier trigger words, therefore freeing Bucky Barnes. All in this comic, while this has been happening, Bucky's been in the lab. He is now out of the lab. He is in a tent, which means that is the Bucky Barnes that is about to get mounted with a new arm and will be leading the Dora Milaje in Infinity War. Not leading like in charge of, but basically like paired up. While Chikala controls the Wakandan army.
I think it's just like T'Challa, like no hard k sound in his name. At least that's how
fine Joanna.
That's how Lupita pronounced it. All right. Oh,
also it's the Dora Milaje.
No,
that's what they call it in the movie. That was actually one of my number one concerns because I've been reading that for years in the comics, and I was like, I don't know how to fucking pronounce that. And she says it like Mila J.
Now I'm living my Legend of Korra nightmare where it's like, I just saw somebody say it out loud, but now I could only see how it's spelled. So I apologize to everybody. I swear I see the movie and everything I described to you is accurate beyond pronunciation.
Should we talk about how they called him the White Wolf, which is a Wakandan character in the comic books?
Dude, we can.
Okay.
Wait, who's the White Wolf?
You can call Bucky the White Wolf.
Oh.
They call Buffy the White Wolf in the post credits, but there's a character called the White Wolf or Hunter in Wakanda. I mean, it's like, it's sort of like the Killmonger character, to be honest with you. It's like an adopted brother of, I mean, he's not, anyway, T'Challa's an adopted brother who like feels like he should have the throne and so sort of makes his bid for it, stuff like that. And he's a white dude from the outside. And then he sort of like,
you didn't think that he was dressed in red and blue and he is white and so he's gonna become the new Captain America?
No, I mean the red and blue, which you pointed out, is definitely, I feel like, a Captain America thing, but the calling a White Wolf, you know, he might just take on some of the like post rebellion aspects of White Wolf, possibly, or not.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's just a little nod for the comics. I don't know. But when someone gets a nickname, it's fun.
That's
true.
I did write it down, but yeah. Then I don't. I think it's, that's interesting. I'm interested to see how Sebastian Stan weathers the next few movies, and whether or not he still wants to be involved going forward, because he could be a weird pivot character that I've never had full confidence in, but basically liked. We'll see. Bucky's got stuff to do. He's back in the game.
His hair looks great.
His hair looks great.
I can't believe I missed
his stump is rocking.
He's like slightly enormous than he was in Civil War. He's so big in Civil War.
I think it's just like having like armor and stuff, because him in the Infinity War trailer when he's like charging in slow motion, it's like back to deltoids the size of my head.
It's not even like, because it's not even when he's in armor in Civil War, he's like in a rust red Henley, and I'm like, did they stuff that thing? What is happening with Sebastian Stan's like chest and shoulder region? All right, anyway,
looking like a Rob Liefeld character.
Definitely a professional human here.
He did not look like that in I, Tonya.
All right, is there anything else about Black Panther that we should mention? Beyonce is not on the soundtrack, guys.
She's also not in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, she will be in Black Panther 2 if Black Panther does as well as everybody's saying it's going to do. Because what else are you going to do besides add Beyonce? What else can you do?
Austin Powers route.
Exactly.
I don't know, where would we go from here? Well, let's just put some Beyonce on it. It's fine. I mean, she'll be in the Disney family, so... You know, because of Lion King. So
nice.
All right, guys. Black Panther, we want to hear your thoughts. Stormspoilers@gmail.com. But until then, Neil, where are we at next week?
Next week, we're staying in. We're reaching into the mailbag. And we're going to read your questions, comments. You can send us some notes about Black Panther. Tell us what you thought. You could ask us questions about stuff. We've been collecting those over the while. Also, if you have any more Game of Thrones theories based on any of the spoilers that have come out recently, please do send us emails about those, stormspoilers@gmail.com. We're going to do a special, very stormy segment with some production spoilers that have come up recently in a nice little safe zone for the people who like safe zones.
A harbor.
Yes.
Ooh, good. Safe harbor.
Thank you.
I was looking for that. I was like, safe room? Panic room? That's all wrong.
Yet. It's too early.
Phantom Zone?
The Phantom Zone. Ooh. What's
getting our little dick rockets?
What's it called?
Thanks,
Zack Snyder. What's when he goes in Black Panther, he goes to like the ethereal plane, but they don't call it that. They call it something else.
Ancestral plane.
The ancestral plane. So maybe we'll do that too. I don't know. The mailbag is infinite in its wonders.
All right. So when I was saying email us at stormspoilers@gmail.com, you could do it about Black Panther. You could do it about Game of Thrones. You could do it about anything. We did not have a Valentine's Day episode this year. Sorry, guys. We still love
Listen
you.
Listen to last
we
year's.
Hope you love
it's
other
still
people.
Relevant.
It's still very relevant. So until next time, where can people find more of your work online? Let's start with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter @JoWroteThis. I'll have some Black Panther stuff going up. I'm not sure it's going to be as good as Dave's or Neil's. And I already have a profile of Letitia Wright, a.k.a. Shuri, up on VF.com. It's great. She was great. She's a delight to talk to and did rap battles for us during the photo shoot. So, check it out.
Oh, God, please become best friends. Neil, where could people find more of your work online?
Get me over on filmschoolrejects.com. You can follow me on Twitter @rejects. I'm going to write something. Oh, okay. The dog says you can also email the show, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. I'll get it.
Awesome. And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter @DA7E. You can find us on Twitter @StarWarsSpoilers. You could find back episodes of ours at StarWarsSpoilers.com. You could find more episodes of my other podcast at FightingInTheWarRoom.com, where we'll also be talking about Black Panther, in case you haven't heard me talk enough about that. And until next week, as always, for everybody but Joanna, who's already failed, don't fall down. Tune them. From y'all don't want money, y'all don't want from me. Y'all wanna die in the chase of things. We all gonna die and break the thing. Trapped inside a burning church, made it out alive. God know my worth. Raw face, scar face, y'all face. More defeat, I know it hurts. 20 of them.